It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Congressional staff investigating the widening General Motors ignition switch recall of over 2 million vehicles said there are indications GM approved the design of the switches in 2002, even though the company knew they did not meet specifications. GM CEO Mary Barra found herself on the hot seat before Congress last week. I'm joined now by phone by Los Angeles Times reporter Jerry Hirsch, who has been following this story. Jerry Hirsch, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me on the show.
And you can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Have you driven or own one of the GM cars that have been recalled? What problems have you experienced? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Jerry Hirsch, I guess it comes down to the classic question of what did GM know and when did they know it?
Well, it looks like they knew there might be problems with this switch more than a decade ago. And this is probably going to cost them $3 or $5 billion. It would have been a lot less expensive to have fixed it at the time.
And it's, as is often the case in situations like this, it's not so much the problem itself, but the fact that they, it appears, covered it up, weren't leveling with people, and now it's become a bigger problem. And what we're hearing is that the Justice Department is looking into investigating this.
Right. Justice Department's all over this, just like they were all over Toyota, and we know how that ended. Toyota paid a $1.2 billion fine and admitted to misleading consumers, regulators, and Congress. And it also paid about $65 million in other fines for delaying recalls. The issue about whether this is a cover-up is hard to know, and the investigations will likely reveal that sometime. But you have to kind of go back at, 12, 15 years ago and look at the old GM. GM was struggling to come out with a small car that could compete with, at the time, the Honda Civic and the Toyota Corolla, although there are a lot of good compact cars out now. And they were struggling to do this. And so they came up with this Cobalt and the Pontiac G6 and the Saturn Ion, hoping that those would be able to fight off these Japanese imports that were taking over that segment of the passenger car market. And they were also cutting costs every place they could because they wanted these cars to be as inexpensive as possible in the given market so they can compete with the Japanese. And they looked at every penny. And somewhere a bad decision was made not to spend an extra 90 cents per ignition part. I think it would have brought the total cost of the part up to about $1.50 if you look through the documents. But they did it on the cheap. They wanted to do it for 50 or 60 cents a car, and this is what it bought them.
We're talking with Los Angeles Times reporter Jerry Hirsch. If you have a comment or question for him, 412-246-2002, 412-246-2002. Do you own a Cobalt, and are you concerned about some of the issues involving the problems that GM has experienced? Have you looked into taking your car in? Are you concerned about which ones have been recalled and maybe confused about whether you should take your own vehicle in to have it looked at? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. And Jerry Hirsch, Scott Oldham of Edmunds.com test drove the Cobalt at an event for journalists a decade ago and experienced the shutoff problem that's at the heart of this issue. Have you ever had a similar experience?
I have not had the experience with driving that Cobalt. I've driven the Cobalt. In fact, many people have driven this car because about 30 to 40% of its total sales were to rental car companies and fleet markets. So if you went to an airport on a business trip or a family vacation, it's likely that you rented either a Cobalt or a G6 at some point because just such a high percentage of the sales went into those channels. I remember the car just as a bad car. It it didn't match up to the competition. It was not a good compact car. It drove poorly. What's really interesting is that when they replaced it, finally, with the Chevrolet Cruze, maybe 4 years ago, as they were coming out of the bankruptcy and restructuring, that car was far more successful in the marketplace and is one of the better-selling compact cars. It's gotten decent reviews from the automotive press. It drives nicely. It's very quiet. And now, only about 20% of those vehicles go to the rental car companies and the other fleet channels. That because you have real consumers, you know, buying this at dealerships in the retail market. The G6 and the Cobalt never really sold well to consumers.
412-246-2002 to join the conversation with Jerry Hirsch. Let's go to Eric in Wilkinsburg. Eric, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment that I used to work for a car dealership that was not Chevrolet, not General Motors. And we knew back then that the ignition switches, when a customer had excess keys on there, that the ignition switches would fail prematurely. Now, we never had any of the airbags failing and the car shutting off while people were driving, but we did have issues where the ignition switch would fail and the car wouldn't start. So conceivably, that sort of failure would result in the same problem that General Motors had. So we were advising people even, well, it was 15 years ago, to take the excess keys off their chains. Ever since then, all I have on mine is literally one door key for the house and one key for the car.
Hmm. What about what Eric's saying, Jerry?
Well, it's an interesting thing. I've had sporadic reports with this happening in other cars. What the mechanism is this a spring inside the switch that creates tension and holds the switch in place. And if it's not strong enough, theoretically, the car could switch into a different position. What's really interesting is that this is all going away, that now we have electronic key fobs and push-button starts, and with each new model year, a larger percentage of cars have that. And you're going to see very few cars with a metal key that you insert into a switch and turn. So this problem, first, I doubt anybody has it now. Everybody's probably going over the tolerances for the switches to make sure everything is perfect. And even if it costs an extra 90 cents or a dollar to fix it, they're going to go out and do it now because they've seen what havoc it's wrecked with GM. But with each successive model year, this whole thing's going to go away. Another interesting thing is that the automakers are developing apps that allow you to start your car with your cell phone, your smartphone. So this idea of a metal key and a switch is pretty archaic.
Now that it's been found out, GM has agreed, of course, to a recall. How do these recalls work? And does everybody who might own one of these problem cars, are they receiving the message? Are they understanding what they need to do and, you know, how to go about bringing their car in case it's one of those faulty ones?
Well, this is what GM is doing. They're going through registration data at the state level, through the DMVs, and through a company called Polk, which collects registration data and provides a lot of research for automakers. And GM is going to go and contact each of the owners that it finds. It's likely that the message won't get through to some people, that either they will have moved or the registration data will be wrong or there'll be a typo in the address or something like that. So if you have one of these cars or you think you might have a car, or even if you have a car that you don't think is in this recall, it's a good idea to go to the automaker websites. They often have a place where you could type in the VIN number of your car and see if there are any outstanding recalls. If you take your car to a dealership to be serviced, when you take it in, ask them if there are any outstanding recalls on the cars. It turns out that people get their cars fixed for recalls at varying rates depending upon how old they are. There's some data from the Society of Automotive Engineers that shows that cars, and this was in 2008, and the repair for recalls in 2008, the repair rate for cars that were 2000 models was about 40%, but the repair rate for cars that were 2008 or 2007 models was about 80%. So the newer the car is, the more attentive owners are, and they're likely to get it fixed. But this is a problem for people who buy used cars. Remember, a lot of these cars, these Cobalts, went to the into the rental market and then were sold by the rental car companies. So they would have maybe be on their second, third, or fourth owners by now. You, people really should go and call dealers and report VIN numbers and check out to see if their car is on this list or to see if the, any other car they have has an outstanding recall and should be repaired.
We're talking with LA Times reporter Jerry Hirsch about the GM recall issues. 412-246-2002 if you want to join the conversation. We have Jim in South Park on the line. Jim, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, Mr. Hirsch. I worked in the automobile industry since 1957. I retired in 2003, but I still do some part-time investigations.
Jim, if I may jump in, where did you work?
I worked for General Motors.
At where?
Well, I was a field guy, and I traveled to all the dealerships, and one of the things we had to do was follow up on recalls, and actually we had to hunt the people down or the car down. Even if it was in a wrecking yard, we had to go there and make the modification because somebody could buy the engine or the vehicle to rebuild it. So, you know, this kind of rubs me the wrong way when they're saying, like, GM is negligent in disclosing, you know, their problems. I have an automotive news issue of March 31st on page 8. They have a lead article there. It says, GM leads in disclosures, not danger. And it shows that the time period between 2005 and 2007, GM had notified NHTSA. The highest point was 700, and the lowest was down around 400. Now, they compared it to Chrysler, Toyota, and Honda. And they have maybe 200 notifications to NHTSA. And the article kind of indicates that GM does not hide what problems they have. They notify them right away. And I'm not saying they didn't have a fault here by changing the switch and not changing the part number, but something fell through the cracks here. And it also seems like NHTSA didn't follow up on the reports. But the other thing is, if you look at the background, and there was an article in the Automotive News, the previous issue, that it's a shame that these people had to die, but it wasn't totally, from what I can see, GM's fault. A lot of them were young people that were driving under the influence. In fact, there was one girl.
Well, wait a minute. Let me jump in, Jim, because I don't discount what you're saying, and I appreciate you bringing it up. But the problem here is that GM apparently, and I'll let Jerry Hirsch respond to this. But what we're hearing is that, and what is being reported is that GM apparently had information about fatal accidents from faulty ignition switches years ago, but in 2005 instructed dealers to tell car owners to lighten the load on their keychains. Jerry, what about
what? Yeah, this is the issue. Okay, well, it doesn't matter. Okay, yes, people should not drive recklessly. People should not drive impaired. However, people have a right to think that their cars are safe, and that the automaker who produced the car is doing whatever it can to make those cars safe. And GM CEO Mary Barra says this straight up. I mean, I think she's as appalled by all this as anybody else. And she's issued multiple apologies. She's met with family members and everything else. So even if I'm driving my car drunk, if I hit a pothole in the road and my car switches off because of that, because there's a defective key switch, and then I lose control of my car because the electronic systems go off, and then I crash into something, and the airbag now doesn't go off. This is GM's fault. The fact that I shouldn't be driving impaired, obviously, but I don't take on some of the blame for this accident because I'm impaired. The car should function as normally, because if I'm driving impaired, okay, I might get home without hurting anybody, or I might cause an accident that would be my fault. So I just don't agree with that, and I don't think the people in the auto industry would agree with it either.
Jim, I'm sorry, I need to jump in because we're running short on time. Jim, I thank you for the call. Jerry, I want to go back to something Jim raised, and I brought it up with Congressman Murphy, and that's about this bill in 2010 that would have strengthened the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. It was defeated largely because of Republican opposition. And it goes back to this idea of voluntary recalls. This measure would have reduced the government's reliance on the industry to self-report. Is that what is needed here?
Yeah, we need some regulation here. I mean, these vehicles are big, dangerous vehicles. They're amazing vehicles. It's amazing how reliable and safe they are. And in fact, people have to realize that cars are only getting safer. They're not becoming more dangerous, and people are surviving terrible accidents in them, and so the technology is really improving. And there's some huge things on the horizon that are going to make cars even safer. However, you know, NHTSA is a small organization regulating the sale of an industry that sells 15 to 16 million vehicles a year. There's something like 250 or 300 million vehicles on the road, and it needs the funds to do its job.
And going forward, what can GM CEO Mary Barra do to prevent something like this from happening in the future?
Well, I think she is going to remake that company. I think she's going top down and saying, either you're with us, you know, or you go find a job somewhere else. We're changing the culture here. We're going to be proactive. That we're not going to look at. We're not going to save money not to fix safety defect. That safety comes first, and then we'll worry about the cost later. These are all things that she said, and that we need to produce high quality, safe cars. And I think this is going to be a wrenching time for General Motors. And by the time they pay some huge federal fines and settle with all the victims, all that's going to be into the billions of dollars. But at the end of the day, they're going to finally change their culture and the way they think about producing vehicles, and could be a better company for it. Unfortunately, there will be this legacy of victims and of deaths and injured that those people will never be made whole.
Los Angeles Times reporter Jerry Hirsch, who covers the car industry, joining us from Washington. Jerry Hirsch, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Coming up, the story of the 1988 Frue Mills High School basketball team that became the only juvenile facility ever to win a state high school basketball title. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.